Ricky's standing by if you would like to share a memory about Leon Redbone by telephone. We'll put you on the air with somebody in front of me now who knows probably as much about Leon Redbone as just about anybody. He toured with him. He was his musical director. He shared many a stage with him. It's Pittsburgh's own Tom Roberts. Tom, thank you for coming.
Why, thank you very much.
I called Tom or texted.
I believe it was an email.
Yes, I communicated with Tom Thursday. I guess it was the day he passed away. And not Tom, Leon. And asked
yes,
him.
Yes, I'm still here.
Asked him if he would join us. And thank you for doing so. Can you explain how your relationship with Leon began?
Well, I mean, honestly, I've been thinking about him an awful lot over these last few days, and I realized that almost every amazing thing that happened for me is a result of Leon Redbone. So most of my thoughts about Leon circle around food or the lack thereof. And because there were lots of times when Leon would make decisions. I remember once we were somewhere in New Mexico, and he says, "Roberts, get out of the vehicle. Listen to what kind of music they're playing at that Mexican restaurant." And I go in, and I'd report back to him what it was. And he says, "Get into the vehicle. We're moving to the next one." But he would make decisions based upon the music that was being played there. He was also a big proponent for the Citizens for Silence. We are slaughtered with lots of unnecessary sound that we don't need to hear. But I remember being a kid and seeing him on, just when I was getting old enough to stay up late and watch Saturday Night Live, and I saw him.
I remember that show. That had to be, you were probably about 14. We're the same age.
We're the same age.
So you were probably 14 or 15. If my memory is right, you and I would have been in what they used to call junior high school or high school when he came on.
15, we were probably in 10th grade.
Yeah.
Maybe 9th or 10th grade. But I remember seeing him and I was like, oh my God, what is that? And he really seemed to be a time traveler. Like he came from somewhere else. He was from another time and another place. And it's like, who is this person?
Yeah, and he would sit so still and play. And it's like, who is this? Who is this really?
Who is this? And there was a lot of mystery. There's a very funny story about when he finally contacted. He called. I had made a tape. And he was appearing at Graffiti. And I gave the tape that I had made to the guy who was playing bass sax and banjo with him. This was probably a show that you saw with John Gill and Cindy Cashdollar. And I handed this to John Gill, and John Gill eventually became one of my big band directors when I lived in New Orleans. And I said, give this to Redbone.
Now, from what I could tell, I was researching this, Leon played Graffiti. You mentioned to me that it was Graffiti. That you saw him at, and that was June 21st, 1985. Does that sound about right?
It probably was.
I mean, there's lots of websites that document these things. Now, I remember the first time I saw him live was on Flagstaff Hill at Schenley Park in an outdoor concert, and I would have sworn it was in the very late 70s or early 80s. But the only documented show is also 1985. And it would have had to have been the summer. So I don't know if he did two gigs in town that night. But in
it's
any event.
Highly unlikely.
Yeah. But it's on the internet, so it must be right. So you gave
that's right. Everything on the internet is true.
So you gave this tape.
I gave this tape to John Gill, and I just kind of passed it off. And I didn't hear anything. And then and I had my card on it. And in the meantime, I had moved out away from where my parents. And one day, Redbone actually called my parents' house.
Oh, my gosh.
And said, I'd like to speak to Tom Roberts, please. And my mother answered the phone and said, who is this? Is this Rogie? This is not funny. Madam, I assure you I am Leon Redbone. I would like to speak to your son. No, who is this? Is this Garvin? No, is this Drescher? Ah. And said, Madam, please, I need to speak to your son. I'd like to hire him. And he eventually got my phone number, and it was. But that's such a typical Pittsburgh story of, who is this? This isn't really him. But, yeah, so he had actually called me, and he says, I'm coming through Pittsburgh, and I'd like you to play a show with me. And wow. So, and that was at Graffiti, and that must have been 1989, 1990. It's probably 1990.
And that's based on a cassette that you slipped to a bandmate.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I guess he had misplayed, well, like most of the stuff, he has lots of tape. Back then, there were lots of tapes that he had, and he would misplace them. And I think that's the only reason why it took him so long to get back in touch with me. So I did a show with him at Graffiti again. And a few weeks, maybe even a few days later, I got a phone call saying, we're going back out on the road again. I'd like you to join me. And the first gig I did outside of Pittsburgh was The Tonight Show. And that's the video that you saw that I was able to put back up. That was part of my history that kind of vanished. That was on YouTube for a while. And then I went to look for it, and it was gone. It's just like, maybe it wasn't gone, but maybe it just got lost in the algorithms talking about the internet. You know, so you see the things that are the most popular ones, and you don't get to see the ones that you want to see.
So what was rehearsing with Leon Redbone like?
There were no rehearsals.
Truly?
No. I mean, he would rehearse. I remember him coming into the room and says, now I want you to do this, and I'd like you to have something that sounds a little bit like a thunderstorm right here. Now I'd like it to have a little bit of that Jimmy Rogers effect. And here I want it to be a little more like, I want to have sweet jazz music here. And then a little bit of like Frederick Chopin at this point, and just like had all these specific things. Then we get on the stage, and it was completely different.
So his choosing you then was beyond complimentary. I mean, he knew that he had to get somebody who could roll along with him and his moods, did he spend some time chatting with you before putting you on stage with him?
Just a little bit.
Yeah, but he must have heard something in your playing that made it clear that you fit his style, because I think about him and he makes it look so easy, but he has to have really worked. Maybe not.
No, he was pretty amazing. He was a very astute student of a variety of musical styles. And I remember we were sitting before a show somewhere in North Carolina, and he was sitting there playing a little bit. And said, well, Reverend Gary Davis would do it like this. And he'd play, and he's like, oh, my God, that sounds just like Reverend Gary Davis. And then Mississippi John Hurt played it this way, and then Blind Blake would do it, and then Blind Lemon Jefferson would do this, and then Jimmy Rogers would do it. I was like, holy cow, that's amazing. So he had internalized all of those personal styles. He was aware of it all, but when he got up on stage, he did what he did. And sometimes what he did was so bizarre. I remember one show. Again, it was in North Carolina somewhere where we were playing at a theater attached to a coffee shop, and he started to play, and he started in the middle of a song. And then he went to the beginning, and then he skipped to the end, and it was just like, okay. I don't know. I just knew what was happening.
You knew it was deliberate. He certainly didn't slip a cog.
Oh, no, he was probably.
No?
He probably had one of those moments of just kind of forgetting where things were happening at that point. But I was there with him, and that was good.
Well, I was looking at his itinerary when I was trying to find the date for the Pittsburgh concerts, and my goodness, this guy was a road warrior. He really traveled.
We toured at least 100 dates a year.
Wow.
And we were all over. And you know what? One of the interesting things, it was all done in car.
Yeah, by the way, this is Tom Roberts, who for 6 years was pianist and music director for the late Leon Redbone. And we're going to play a song, one of the earliest available Leon Redbone, from one of the earliest available recordings in a minute. Tom will pick it. But Tom's with us today as we talk about Leon Redbone, who passed on this past Thursday, May 30th. On that Tonight Show recording featuring you, suddenly, you know, your second performance with Leon Redbone is on the Tonight Show. He goes over to sit and talk with guest host, a very young Jay Leno, and he makes it clear he does not like to fly.
Leon had been in several plane accidents, severe plane accidents. I think one in Charleston, West Virginia, the plane literally turned upside down, and they were hanging upside down, then the plane just fell. And he did save some people. There was a lot of deaths in that, but he was terrified to fly.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. We did fly to Europe with him, and he would always get a bulkhead, and he would take all these altimeters and all of these like air pressure things, and he basically recreated the cockpit of an airplane in the bulkhead. And he just sat there and just watched it to make sure that everything was okay. Like, so as if he's going to be able to like control it all. But
so he'd be looking at things like altitude, mm-hmm, and temperature, and interesting.
Oh, yes.
Very interesting. Let's play something from this and tell me. And plus, I want to play some others you'd like us to hear. But tell me what you think we ought to play from this. Tom's looking at an album called Early Recordings, which has been reissued on CD. It features a very young Leon Redbone on the front cover.
And it's a very young Leon Redbone recording. This is when he was doing stuff that he, you know, this is his original stuff. Why don't you play, this is a Skip James tune. It's called Me and the Devil Blues.
Me and the Devil Blues. I'll need a moment to just... I see it there. We're making radio before your very ears
and eyes. And do you see that little sweet little note in there on the sticket?
Yes.
That was from Leon's wife, Beryl, who just wrote, "This may be my favorite."
Ah. Oh,
and this is probably when she met him and fell in love with him, and pretty sweet stuff.
You can hear the drawer of the CD player opening here.
Professional media, ladies and gentlemen.
Do you want to hear it? Do you want to hear it close? There it is.
It's like you're in the studio.
So here's the Skip James song featuring the great Leon Redbone.
You got to do. I said it must be the evil spirit. So deep down in the ground.
Leon Redbone at the Saturday Light Brigade. And if you have a question about Leon Redbone, or if you would like to share a memory or reflection, Larry just mentioned he was at that same graffiti show that we were talking about. Tom and I would love to hear from you, 412-200-5975 or 1-888-752-7234. It's just us, and we'd love to have you call. Tom is Tom Roberts, who was playing piano in that last song you heard. I'm forgetting everything. There you are.
Everyone is all discombobulated.
It is.
yeah, that was from the album that I did with Leon. And we were chatting, you know, we should probably turn the microphone on during these little moments, because some of the best radio moments are occurring when nothing, there's no microphones on.
I know.
We were talking about Leon's persona and who he was and how he behaved. And, you know, he really did. He never really, that was not a persona. That was him. He would, every time I saw him, he was wearing the hat and the dark glasses. And I asked him, I said, Red, and he would drive. He would drive the truck at night. And he was driving along with the hat on and the glasses on, the sunglasses on. And he had pulled them down so he could look over the top of them. And I said, Redbone, take the glasses off. No, I refuse to do so. Silence, silence. And he just never left that thing. One day we were in somewhere in Texas, and he walked out to the car without the hat on. And Dan Levinson, the clarinetist, who's a good friend of mine still, and he walked to the car, and Dan looked at him and said, excuse me, sir, who are you? Not that he didn't recognize him, but it was just like we were so used to seeing him with the hat and the glasses. And once he shared with me the reason why he wore those glasses was he was just so shy. He just wanted to keep a barrier between him and the rest of the world. And, you know, there's hysterical stories about him in terms of how he behaved, and some of them are not true. Some of them are very true because I was there. And then there were moments that are just so touching. Him discussing the nature of time. And I remember he would play, and what's quite ironic about this is his illness was a very advanced form of dementia, which really just destroyed him. But he was fascinated with the idea of memory and genetic memory. He said to me once, oh, he would play games because I have a fairly good memory, and we checked into a hotel in probably Madison, Wisconsin, where we would always go, and he says, all right, Roberts, what room was I in? And I would think through it for a second. I said, all right, you were in this room. Kelso was in this room. Levinson was in this room, and I was in this
room. From a prior stay.
From a prior stay. And he says, how did you do that? And he would continue to do this with me, just like, how did you remember this? And I said, well, I would kind of go back and remember where we were and things that were associated with this, and I would just kind of be there. And he shared with me at that moment, he says, you know, we are made up of the cells of our parents, and they are made up of the cells of their parents, and they are made, and just back into antiquity. If they, we could possibly access that cellular memory, we could time travel. I know.
He makes a case, doesn't he?
Well, it's pretty fascinating. And when you learn about Redbone, there's an article, and you could probably see it. We can put it up here on the SLB website and on the Facebook thing, and I've shared it on my Facebook page. It's called Vessel of Antiquity. And he referred to us as vessels of antiquity. All things, all time are within us somewhere. And if we can access that memory, then we can truly time travel. He was a very interesting man. He was fascinated by Gurdjieff, Sufism. I learned so much stuff from him. You know, I discovered so much music that I never had. I stayed here. I never would have heard this music, and I would not be the person that I am today. You know, I've heard all of this magical music, Shari Barabash and John McCormick and Aaron Lebedev and Alexander Stelio and just amazing ethnic music, because he was very much a student of that stuff as well. What you looking at over there,
well,
Larry?
Well, I was looking as I listened to you. If you go to leonredbone.com, there's an old news article. But there also are some wonderful quotes of his that juxtapose so nicely with what you were just saying and the way he would talk. I think of these things as obstacles rather than opportunities, because if they were opportunities, it means I actually took the business of doing them seriously. To take myself too seriously is the gentle kiss of death. You know, I'm totally absorbed in the business of learning, but I don't want to be an apprentice to the business of learning. I simply want to absorb everything I can and not be compartmentalized. I have no great desire to delve into the intricacies of correct harmony or notate everything. If it doesn't interest me, I only know what sounds good to me.
And that was one of the things that he did. He referred to it as the people's chords. And there's lots of little gags. If we had the piano set up, I could show you the people's chords version of Moonlight in Vermont, but we don't have that here. But he would strip things down to its absolute essentials. And I will say, I learned so much about what music really is through him. One of the tenets of the – we've been on the show, the Red Beans and Rice combo, yeah, with Wayno and Dave Klug. One of the things that Redbone told me – we were on a tour, and trumpet player and a clarinetist, probably Peter Eklund and Dan Levinson, were on it, and they did the first couple – you know, maybe the first 2 weeks of the tour, and then they had to leave. And I did the last couple shows with him, and he said to me, all right, there's less people here now. What are you going to do? And I said, well, I think I would play more. And he says, wrong. Less people, play even less. Play less. Because part of the problem is if you assume, and I've heard this, I've heard this happen. I've heard this thing muddled up so many times it's given me the heart failure, where people, there's less players, you know, a duo or a trio, and then they try to fill in every single space, and it doesn't sound good. And when there's just the two of us, he stripped it down to its bare essentials, and it sounded beautiful.
That's so counterintuitive. It's as if he wanted the ratios to be the same, I guess. Mm-hmm.
You just need it to be as little as possible. And it's perfect. It's beautiful. You don't want to fill things up.
Where do you think he learned to play?
In Sumeria. He said he claimed to be 5,000 years old. I think, you know, I don't think anyone is ever going to know these things. He probably did it the way that most of the natural people do. He heard a sound that he liked, and he tried to imitate it. So it's fascinating. But, you know, he was aware of all of this music, and he was aware of more music than people would think of.
Yeah, his knowledge is amazing. And also, I remember he plays tuba, right? Oh, I could have.
No.
I guess he played with a tuba player.
That was
then.
Vince Giordano, who I never would have played. I mean, everything in my life is literally a result of that moment on The Tonight Show in 1990.
So I remember him at Flagstaff Hill with a tuba player. That must have been Vince
It was
Giordano.
Either Vince or Jonathan Dorn, who was the producer for some of these early
and
records.
And it's odd that I, you know, the way talk about memory selves is, you know, I picture him in the white suit sitting and playing. The tuba was probably right next to them, and I merged the two of them. I also remember his commercial that brought him so much fame for the detergent, and I can remember
Mama gets it out with A-L-L. I thought you were going to talk about the Budweiser commercial. That's what most people think of. You know, when I try to explain to people
I forgot that
who Leon Redbone is, I try to check out what their age is, and like he means something to different people of different generations. People of our generation, with the exception of you, obviously, think of him as being the Budweiser commercial.
When you say Bud.
When you say Bud. And he's like on a surfboard, and they're walking around. He's flying through the air
on
that.
I forgot all about that.
And then some people hear him as the voice on the Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah, he
commercial.
Sang the theme song.
He was, yeah, and he sang the theme song to Harry and the Hendersons. Your feet's too big. He was also on the Getting to Know You, Getting to Know All About, which was the car commercial.
And he was an elf, too, wasn't he?
He was like, now when I talk to the millennials and the children, that's the reference that you've got to work with. Oh, that's a real person? Yes, it was.
This is Tom Roberts. You are listening to the Saturday Light Brigade Saturday mornings on a great bunch of community radio stations and internet radio stations and streaming services. If you have a question about Leon Redbone, and I know you might not, but if you do, I just want you to know that you can feel comfortable getting it to us. Just call. And
I might actually tell the egg salad sandwich story today.
I'd like to hear that.
So good.
Let me just give the number. It's 412-200-5975. We are live. The egg salad story sandwich.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Why don't we play a little Leon Redbone music here? Now, this is from a lot of these albums that he put out have got very typical titles that are based upon one of the songs on the record. But there are several of them that are mysterious. And I once asked him, and I realized later what he was doing. I said to him, Redbone, what's up with Red to Blue? Why is it called Red to Blue? And he said, it's a spiritual thing. You need to think about it. But it's not. It's Jelly Roll Morton in his Library of Congress recordings. He talks about the rhythm changes from red to blue. And I was trying to find it where it is. But Jelly discusses something about a musical thing where the rhythm changes from red to blue.
So hot to cool, maybe.
Who knows? Who knows?
See, I was thinking blood, right?
Could be anything. But so this is a recording that he did with the Roaches. That's kind of a Saturday Light Brigade kind of thing, the Roaches.
I've never heard this. I can't wait. What's it called?
It's called Reaching for Someone and Not Finding Anyone There, which was a Bix Beiderbecke with Paul Whiteman original thing. So let's hear it. Wrong one.
Whoa. Which number is
number
it
three?
Oh, not the wrong. It was the wrong CD.
It's the wrong CD.
I had two number threes.
Wait a second.
No, I've got it.
You got it now. Okay.
I've got it.
I'm just a bubble of trouble and care. Very fond of fitting, but I'm getting nowhere. Reaching for someone and not finding anyone there. No sweet romancer to answer my prayer. Always building castles that nobody will share. Reaching for someone and not finding anyone there.
Not finding anyone there.
Is there a June honeymoon? Is there a tune? Lovers croon. Is there a day coming soon when I'll find someone somewhere who wouldn't worry, who wouldn't swear? Heaven is a haters when you're up in the air, reaching for someone and not finding anyone there.
Ba-ba-da, ba-da-da-da. Leon, over here, Leon.
Is there a June honeymoon? Is there a tune lovers croon? Is there a day
coming soon, when I'll find someone somewhere who wouldn't worry, who wouldn't swear. Heaven is the haters when you're up in the air, reaching for someone and not finding anyone there.
Leon Redbone, tell me about that song.
Well, that's a.
I'm doing it again.
You're doing it again, Larry. I'm the one that's supposed to be all kerfluffled.
I know
today.
It's a.
That's a Prairie Lullaby, Jimmy Rogers tune, but that's from an album that we were just looking at the cover to. That's not the right album. It's the one up there.
People listening don't know that.
They don't know.
Here it is.
It's called.
He painted this cover.
He did. Leon was also an amazing artist, and it's very similar to the Tintin work. He loved the art, and I can't remember who the artist is. But the name of this album is called From Branch to Branch, which has perplexed people for quite some time until you realize that one of the numbers that Leon would do in concert was when he – have you ever seen him do the shadow puppet?
Oh, sure.
He would sing. Yeah. He would do that to Shari Barabas, the great Hungarian singer, with a song that is called When a Bird Flies From Branch to Branch. And so there are these mystical little moments of little things that are meaningful to him that he would use to refer to the names of these albums. So I hear we have a caller online.
Yeah, and Beryl Handler, I noticed, is credited as producer, and that's his wife.
That's his wife. And he was his manager and just an all-around great gal.
Well, Janine is here, and I'm so glad she called because I suspect she has seen Leon Redbone a few times. Hey, Janine.
I hate to admit I haven't.
You've not.
I missed him. I know. Hang up on me right now. I know. I feel awful. I felt so bad when I saw in the paper that he passed away, too, because I have some questions. Just I saw him on Saturday Night Live. You know, that's the first time I saw him. And I would be looking in a newspaper's form, and I don't know what happened. And now he was at the Graffiti. What year was that, 85, you said?
85 or
89.
Yeah, he came again, too.
And then 90. We toured 100 to 150 days a year.
I heard that. Yeah, he was really, I guess he didn't rest too much. Yeah, I saw him on Saturday Night Live, and he was so mysterious. I couldn't figure out where he came from or how old he was or anything like that.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering, like, you know, you knew him for, Tom, you knew him for, I think, 8 years. Now, did he ever tell you how he came up with that name or what his real name was?
Oh, well, you can read it in the article, Vessel of Antiquity. We'll put it up there. But
oh, good.
Leon, okay. His real name is Dikran Gabalian or Gabarian, and he is of Armenian descent. His his grandfather was killed in the Armenian genocide. His family was living in Israel. Then they had to leave. They had moved to Paris. So the family, there's a lot of great personal loss that I kind of sensed almost immediately that he is trying to connect with something from not only within his own past, but, you know, if you heard me earlier saying, you know, within our memories, our cellular memories, we can remember the memories of our ancestors. And when you read this article by Megan Pugh, and it's one of the most perfect art, someone finally got him right. You start to realize what a complex man he was and what a sensitive man he was, in spite of all of the hysterically funny things that he would do and all of the deliberate tries to hide who he was. Because, you know, we really do. We're just simply who we imagine ourselves to be. This just reminded me of something. I remember when I first came back north. You know, I moved down to New Orleans after I did the Tonight Show. There's a lot of band leaders watching because Scott Black, who was the trumpet player with Redbone's band, was a New Orleanian, and all those guys down there were watching to see him, and they luckily saw me. And when I went back to the hotel room, I had all these offers from these band leaders in New Orleans, which is exactly what I wanted to do. And I just felt the magic all around me and things changing. So I moved down there. When I went back up north again, Leon found out that I had moved to Annapolis with ex-wife number two, or soon to be ex-wife number two. And he contacted me. And the very first show we did was in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. And we were driving there from New Hope. And I remember saying to him, and I think maybe subconsciously I was attempting to get onto the inside, and I said to him, hey, Redbone, there's something I've always wanted to ask you. And you could see him looking very, and I said,
how old are you at this time?
I have no idea.
You're
I don't remember.
Pretty young, though, right?
No, I'm in my 30s. Okay. I was in my mid-30s.
Oh, yeah.
I asked him, I said, and Redbone, of course, is thinking, I'm going to ask him, what's your real name? How old are you? Da-da-da-da-da-da. But I didn't care about that. And what I asked him was, hey, I remember when we were on that first tour 4 years ago, you played Piano Rolls by Blind Boone. Was that really Blind Boone? And then I just saw him totally relax and just say, yes, he recorded a number of Piano Rolls in the year 1912, and it's really amazing to listen to what he did. And at that moment, I felt like, okay, I am And I didn't do it deliberately, but I think, I don't know, maybe subconsciously I realized this was something. And then later that at the end of that trip, we're driving back from Woonsocket back to New Hope. And he pulls out a John McCormick recording. These are all on tapes. And he said, I'd like you to listen to this number. And I brought this CD. Maybe we'll play it to close everything out. And it's John McCormick.
Good, yeah.
John McCormick singing, I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair. And the first time that you hear it, you're embarrassed. And you don't know why you're embarrassed. And then I asked him, I said, play it again. And the second time, you realize why you're embarrassed. And the reason why you're embarrassed is it is so pure, it is so in touch with the true essence of what we all are. You know, like that childhood sense of who we are. And before we've given up and try to become the demographic that we think we're supposed to be. And when you hear this, you realize, oh, my God, this is so pure. This is so real. This is so perfect. It is so wonderful. And Redbone actually had a tape made of I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair that was like a 90-minute cassette that was nothing but that song. And that was also the moment where he was listening to it, and he had this huge car accident somewhere in Minnesota. And his comment was, well, whenever the aliens were done with the deer, they dropped him directly in front of me, and I was listening to I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair. And the car was destroyed, and we had to do that whole tour just in a rented Cadillac. So there's three of us with all of the props for the show and all of the luggage for all, and we're just sitting there driving with our suitcases in our laps. And it was an amazing, just amazing things that happened. So, but yeah.
I think I don't need to ask you, but I think maybe what you could do is write down everything you remember about him, you know, because we don't like these things to get lost.
This is what my therapist and I have been discussing of doing these memories and the egg salad sandwich story. We may be running out of time here today, but it will be. I'm going to write it down, and we'll do it for a friend of mine has a blog in L.A. called Knock and Know It All. And
do you have a website?
Yes, I do have a website, and we can send you exciting offers from offshore pharmacies once you sign up for it.
It's easy. It's Tom Roberts. It's just tomrobertspiano.com, and we've linked to it, tomrobertspiano.com.
Okay. Yeah. I'll let you go because I know you have got a lot to do. But he never mentioned like what Redbone meant to him because I know it's like an African American kind of skin tone. Did he ever go into that?
Well, yes, and one of the things that happened with me is I got Redbone actually kind of challenged me into doing this Lucky Roberts project, and I did it. And then as a result of that, I met Lucky Roberts' family and became romantically involved with his great-granddaughter, and I met Lucky Jr. down in Florida. And Lucky's all of the descendants are all of mixed race, and he made the comment. And Lucky Jr. said, well, a Redbone is a light-skinned black woman or a light-skinned black person. So,
yeah. See, I always think they're was an American Indian, a Native American group simply called Redbone.
There was one
who had a huge hit.
Yeah. Come and Get Your Love.
Yeah. In fact, when I was doing my research on Leon this week, I kept being reminded of them.
Yeah.
Janine, thanks for calling.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. Take care. And that's tomrobertspiano.com. So, Noah Ixhalet story, huh?
Well, how much time do we have here?
Oh, we have.
We have like seven. All right,
yeah.
So here's the egg salad sandwich story that is hysterical. So 9/11, I was supposed to leave on tour. Yes, the 9/11. I was going to leave on 9/12 and to go on tour with Redbone. I remember that day people calling saying, are you willing to get onto an airplane? Of course you couldn't because they've stopped all flights for the longest time. But 1 month later, when all the flights were opened up again, we did another tour, and it was all through like Indiana and Wisconsin and things like that. And I just remember the very first meal we were about to have, Redbone stopped in front of a gas station and said, "Roberts, get out of the vehicle. See if they have an egg salad sandwich." And I went, "What? Get out of the vehicle. See if they have an egg salad sandwich." And I went in and I asked, and they didn't. And he said, "Get into the vehicle." And then we drove to the next gas station. And I said, "Do you have an egg salad sandwich?" So I brought it out to him, and he said, "That's the wrong shape." And he actually made a little, "That's round." And he put his hands in the shape of a circle. Yeah. Said, "The one I'm looking for is in a triangular container." And he made this little image with his thumb and his, you know, the angle in his one hand. So we would drive around and look for an egg salad sandwich in this triangular container. And it turns out that Redbone was in Colorado on 9/11, and everything shut down, and he was starving, which is karma for him because he wouldn't let us eat usually. And once I said, "Redbone, why won't you let us eat?" "You play better when you're miserable." And then he said, "I like to keep you in a weakened state." You know, he changed the rider on the for the concert things because he realized we were surviving on the food that was brought in the riders. So he changed the rider to be Swiss cheese, pita bread, jalapeno peppers, and Jägermeister. So that's all that was there.
That would make you miserable.
Well, and so you've been saying, "We want to keep doing a week inside." So he was there in the middle of Colorado, and nothing was open. And he must have gone for a day or two until he stumbled upon a gas station that was open, and there was an egg salad sandwich there.
In
the triangular thing, and he ate it. And it must have tasted so good to him. Was that the only thing that he wanted to eat that trip? And it was like 4 weeks.
Wow.
But so, and I said, "Redbone, why are you eating this?" And he said, "Well, you know, those things are brought in, but they're machine made, and they're brought in by a man in a white suit and in a very clean truck, and it's not been touched by human beings." I was like, what are you talking about? So at the end of that tour, we go to this very fancy, it's somewhere in Indiana. It's a very fancy, like a mother and her daughter owned this big gas station that had like a deli in it. And it had all these, you could buy these little teddy bears. It was very, very cute, Midwestern kind of thing. And Redbone buys the egg salad sandwich in the triangular container. And the girl at the counter said, "Sir, we have a deli here. You can get a fresh egg salad sandwich here." No. And then I look directly at him and I ask her a question. He says, "Miss, my friend here seems to believe that this sandwich is brought here fresh today by a man in a hermetically sealed truck wearing like a white suit that is completely germ-free and that this is completely a wonderful thing." She said, "Oh, no, this is Jimbo brought these in. He's kind of dirty in his truck. And this is, seriously, sir, you should get one from the deli there." And he says, "The woman is crazy." And so he gets it. He gets this sandwich, and we're driving along, and he's sitting there eating it with his pinky. He's driving, and he's got his pinky extended as he's eating it. And you could just see him thinking about Jimbo and how dirty he was. And then he just would have to stop. Then he started stopping at all the gas stations within the next few hours, but for a different reason. That is the egg salad sandwich story, ladies and gentlemen.
Indeed. Hey, let's sneak in. You've got one with Ringo Starr, of all people.
Yeah, listen to this.
Let's sneak that in, and then we'll close. We'll talk a little bit to close, and then maybe it'd be nice to hear "I Dream of Jeannie" and his memory. Anything to tell us about the Ringo Starr?
Listen and enjoy.
I want to go back to my little grass shack in Kalakakua, Hawaii. I want to be with all the conies and wahinas that I knew long ago. I can hear all guitars a-playing on the beach at Ho'onana. I can hear the Hawaiians say, Komo mai no kauka I kaile wala kaho.
It won't be long till my ship will be sailing back to Kona. A grand old place that's always fair to see. I'm just a little Hawaiian and a homesick island boy. I want to go back to my fishing port.
I want to go back to my little grass shack in Kalakakua, Hawaii, where the humu humu nuku nuku apu
I go swimming by.
Where the humu humu nuku nuku apu
I go swimming by.
My little grass shack in Kalakakua, Hawaii. I want to be with all the conies and wahinis that I knew long ago. I can hear old guitars a-playing on the beach at Ho'onau. I can hear the Hawaiians saying, Koma mai no kahua I kahaile wala kaho.
Won't be long till my ship will be sailing back to Kona.
A grand old place that's always fair to see.
I'm just a little Hawaiian and a homesick island boy. I want to go back to my fishing port. I want to go back to my little grass shack in Kalakakua, Hawaii.
I go swimming by.
Where the humu humu noku noku apu I go swimming by.
Wow, that's Leon Redbone singing along with Ringo Starr, and that's from the album Whistling in the Wind.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, the most interesting bits of conversation are happening in between. We have to come back and do this again.
We should do it again. And I told Tom a moment ago that he should do a one-man show, don't you think?
Nah,
he could get on stage.
Nah, I got too much other stuff to do.
Yeah, but we were talking that Leon has two children, two girls.
Two grown women that are quite beautiful, as would be the children of a Middle Eastern person. And when boys would come to pick up Blake for a date, the eldest one, who was named after Blind Blake.
Oh, gosh.
And he would be there cleaning weapons or sharpening his bowie knife, saying, well, what time do you expect to bring Blake back home today? Oh, really? And he's cleaning like a musket or something. So many great stories. Maybe I will write it all down. Definitely I will write it on down. He changed my life in almost every aspect. I was just sitting there thinking about it this morning, and he really did.
Yeah, and you had noted on, as you like to call it, the Book of Face. Somebody had said, sorry for your loss, and your simple reply was my gain.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great way to put it.
And here is Redbone's favorite piece. Give a listen.
That is amazing.
It's magical, isn't it?
Yeah, that just captivated me.
Do you know why? Because your heart is open. You are not pretending to be something that you are not. You are in touch with that part of yourself that is eternal. And so was Leon.
So are you. And we should do this
again.
Gives me chills just to listen. Tom Roberts, thank you.
Larry, thank you so much for allowing me to be here. This was part of my morning, so I'm very happy that you allowed me to do this. And maybe we can do another day like this when we're a little less disorganized and plan it a little better. But I think this was probably a very wonderful little tribute today.
Absolutely. Thank you to Tom Roberts. Look for him at Tom Roberts Piano. com.
Thank you, Leon.